There's a lot of other things that we could do or that the state could do to really increase transparency and make the accessibility in Washington greater. One of the things, and you saw it last session most likely, is legislative staff making an effort to unionize. When we talk about transparency, when we really look at the legislature, the legislators are there, yes, pushing the bills, making the arguments, but the staff, the code writers or bill writers, all of those people are the ones also putting in a massive amount of work. So changing kind of the structure around and making it so that one legislative assistant doesn't have five people that they're an assistant to, and rather a really more one-on-one relationship and process, would really change the legislature for the people on the outside.
Welcome to WA Possible, a podcast about what is possible for economic justice in Washington State. This podcast is presented by the Washington State Budget and Policy Center, a research and policy organization working to advance progressive state budget and tax policies that promote racial equity and economic dignity. At the Budget and Policy Center, we dream of a brighter future where everyone has a home to rest in, families can afford child and elder care, and people have enough money to buy the food and resources they need. On WA Possible, we talk with partners, advocates, and staff who are helping make this vision a reality. We know that economic justice is possible here in Washington State because we are building toward it together. I'm Madeline Kraft, Development Manager at the Budget and Policy Center. State-level policy impacts people in Washington every day, but how many people know the ins and outs of how laws, services, and programs come to be? Some of you might recall the I Am a Bill song from Schoolhouse Rock, but that's a simplified version of how a bill might make it through the U.S. Congress at the federal level. To be an effective advocate for bold policies closer to home, it's helpful to know how the Washington State Legislature works and how to engage with the process. In our final episode of the season, our communication specialist, April Dickinson, talks to Denise Guerrero, the membership and policy manager of Washington Community Alliance, a statewide coalition of organizations and tribes led by and working in communities of color. That was Denise speaking at the top of the episode. She shares her experience of working with the legislature, some of the challenges with the current system, and she talks about some reforms that we all could support that will improve our democracy. And April speaks with our executive director at the Budget and Policy Center, Misha Werschkel. Misha shares her reflections about her experience advocating for state policies that support the well-being of people in our state. But before those conversations, we want to share a little explainer from the Washington State Legislative Information Center about what legislative session in Olympia looks like. Let's get to the episode.
Welcome to Legislative Support Services Understanding the Legislative Process class. The legislature works on a biennium. This is a two-year cycle. It's important to know that bills not passed in the first year of the biennium are carried over to the second year. According to our state constitution, regular sessions begin the second Monday in January. The first year of regular session is a long session. Long sessions last 105 days, and this is when the legislature creates the biennial budget. The second year of a biennium is a short session. Short sessions last 60 days, and this is when the legislature creates supplemental budgets. The first year is always an odd-numbered year. The second year is an even-numbered year. We also have special session. Special sessions can be called by the governor, or the legislature can call themselves into a special session, with two-thirds majority vote in both chambers. Special sessions can last up to 30 days, and we can have multiple special sessions. There are 49 districts in Washington State, equal in population. Every 10 years after the national census is done, the data is compiled, and an independent redistricting commission redraws the districts to make sure they're still equal in population. Washington State has a bicameral legislature. This means we have two chambers. We have the Senate and the House of Representatives. Each district has one senator that serves a four-year term and two representatives that serve two-year terms. Due to the vast amount of bills that can be introduced in session, the House and Senate have legislative committees to help decide which bills will move forward in the process. There are policy committees, fiscal committees, and the rules committee, although the rules committee functions differently than the other standing committees. Bills are proposed legislation from members, and we're about to jump into how a bill becomes a law in Washington state. Every bill starts as an idea in someone's head, and the idea gets written down and submitted to the code reviser. The code reviser's office takes the written idea and puts it in a draft bill format. This draft bill needs to have an elected member sponsor it before it moves on. Once the bill has a sponsor, or sponsors, it goes back to the code reviser's office, where it is turned into a real bill with its official 4-digit bill number. According to our state constitution, members can pre-file bills. This means even though session doesn't start until the second Monday in January, members can start pre-filing bills the first Monday in December. All the pre-filed bills are introduced on the first day of session. After a bill has been filed, it gets its first reading. This is the introduction of the bill on the floor. The bill is read in a pro forma session. Pro forma means as a matter of form. In its first reading, it's assigned to a standing committee. In the committee, the bill gets a chance to have a hearing. If it gets a hearing, this is when public testimony is taken. Committees can also have work sessions. Work sessions are an informal discussion of a measure or topic by a committee. No action or testimony is taken on a bill in a work session. Committees also have executive sessions. They can take executive action on a bill, offer a substitute bill, refer the bill to another committee. If a bill has a $50,000 fiscal impact, it has to go to a fiscal committee after a policy committee. And even if a bill got a hearing, the committee could still take no action on it. And they can refer the bill to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee is the process by which bills are made eligible to be placed on the floor calendar for a second reading. The second reading is when the committee substitutes are offered, and the whole chamber decides by vote which version of the bill to move forward. At the second reading, floor amendments may be offered. After the second reading, the bill can go back to the Rules Committee, or the rules can be suspended and it can be moved directly into a third reading. The third reading is the last vote a bill needs to pass in its chamber of origin before moving to the opposite chamber. In the opposite chamber, the bill goes through the same process as in the chamber of origin. It gets read on the floor and assigned to a committee. It has a chance to get a public hearing and move through standing committee and rules process to a second and third reading onto the opposite chamber floor. One of the differences from the chamber of origin process is that the opposite chamber cannot amend a bill. They can only propose amendments on a bill. If the opposite chamber passes the bill without offering amendments, then the bill moves on in the process. If a bill has been amended by the opposite chamber, the chamber of origin must decide whether it will concur with the amendments. Leadership decides which bills returned from the second chamber will be discussed and places those bills on the concurrence calendar. If the chamber of origin concurs with the amendments, the bill has passed the legislature. It is signed by the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, and it moves on to the governor's desk for governor action. The governor has a few options when it comes to executive action on a bill. They can sign the bill or veto the bill. They can veto a full bill or an entire section in a bill. And in budget bills, the governor can even veto line items. They also have the option to do nothing. Unlike the federal process, where if the president doesn't sign a bill, it does not pass, bills become law in Washington state with or without the governor's signature. Bills generally are effective 90 days after the last day of session. Bills can have different effective dates if it's specified in the bill. Because session is a limited amount of time and there is a lot of work to do, the legislature adopts a cutoff calendar. This relates calendar days to the days of session and creates deadlines for when bills need to be passed each step of the process. Bills necessary to implement the budget are not subject to the same cutoff deadlines. The order of the cutoff dates goes with the process. First, bills must be out of the Chamber of Origin Policy Committee, then Fiscal Committee, then out of the Chamber of Origin. After that, opposite chamber policy and fiscal committees, and out of the opposite chamber. Finally, the last cutoff day is the last day of session, sine die.
So we just listened to a really informative clip from the Legislative Information Center that shared about the details of the process of the legislative session, which I feel like most folks probably don't know a lot about. But I think what I would love for you to share on today's episode is kind of the more personal interaction that you have as an advocate working on bills that you have with a legislative session. And like, what are the ways that people can engage and how does the process look like from your point of view?
Yeah. So as the video covered, there's a couple of different ways people can engage. These are all more formal ways. You can sign up to testify during a committee hearing. You can email testimony. You can even call and leave a voicemail or message to your legislator. But some of the other ways is in our advocacy is we set up one-on-one meetings or sometimes caucus meetings with the legislators to talk through the policy that we're advocating for. It's a lot more intimate, and you're able to really dive in deep on the policy rather than just stating, here's why I support.
And how do those meetings look during the legislative session?
Yeah, they're very, funny. So, meetings typically look like 15 to 20 minute increments if you're lucky. And you, if you're in Olympia, you will go to their office. You sit around a big table, you talk to them about the policy. Lately, because of COVID, it's been a lot of Zoom calls. So you get a Zoom call from their or Zoom link from their legislative assistant, and you join that. And as soon as the legislator is able to join, they join on and you go about your conversation like you would in an in-person setting.
Yeah, when I was a legislative assistant back in 2008, 2009, I remember those meetings going so fast and like the advocates really trying to like make sure that their message was honed in for those meetings. How do you feel about that setup in terms of really being able to like reach the legislator?
Yeah, it's really difficult. One, because of the short window of time. So you, like you said, you have to really have your points ready and you have to have your case, especially if it's a legislator that is unfamiliar with the bill. If it's someone that already knows the bill, then it's a bit different. Your approach changes, obviously. But the time constraints really make it hard. And I was going to say, it's funny, you know, from working in the legislature, there's always lobbyists that are like, oh yeah, I just tap them on the shoulder in the hallway. And like, unfortunately, well, it's funny, it's super true. And like, that's really the way that you get work done.
Yeah, that actually brings up a good point. Like, something that the Legislative Information Center video doesn't really get into is actually the lobbying aspect, right? Because it talks about how the legislature is set up and how the lawmakers are doing their work. But a lot of the way that that work is influenced is actually from lobbyists. And I think sometimes the word lobbyist gives a bit of a like bad taste in someone's mouth. Yeah. But lobbyists are actually, you know, advocating on all different kinds of issues, and some of which are like important issues that we care a lot about and that are aligned with our values. What is the environment like from that side of things when you're actually like lobbying or advocating on behalf of a bill? And how does it feel, I guess, to like be in that process, trying to advocate for something that you really care about?
Let's see. I think in a way it can feel very high stakes, especially, I mean, the video or audio talked about this two-part session of like one long session and one short session. Especially in the short sessions, your time is so limited. You have short cutoffs or quick cutoffs, like short turnarounds for time and getting responses. And so I think a lot of it can feel super high stakes and like lead to maybe like backdoor negotiations that you kind of had to be out of and like trust that things are working.
Yeah. So one of the things that we really care about at the Budget and Policy Center is government accountability and transparency. And one of the things that we kind of have to rely on is trusting that the folks involved in the process are going to kind of hold up their end of the bargain. And, you know, the work that you're doing with the Washington Community Alliance kind of seeks to address some of those concerns through representation of communities of color in the U.S. Census, monitoring and advocating for equitable redistricting, supporting political power and leadership of BIPOC communities, and just so much more. So in your view, like, what is possible for improving government accountability in Washington? And what areas that you're working on, like what is inspiring you the most and gives you like the most hope for change?
Yeah, I think so many things are possible. And I think, you know, one of the things for increased accountability and transparency in the legislature is making that switch from a part-time to a full-time legislature like we see in other states. But outside of that, with the work that WCA and WCA Action Fund are doing, policies like proportional representation and strengthening the Washington Voting Rights Act are all ways that we hope to do that. If you're following election results in the city of Seattle, Proposition 1B was just on the ballot, and we're seeing the results roll in, and it's really showing that voters are ready for types like these kind of democracy reforms and these changes in our electoral systems.
Can you explain a little bit about what ranked choice voting is and how it benefits voters and how it would improve democracy?
Yeah. So ranked choice voting is essentially a system of voting where you rank the candidates in order of like your favorite or your preference. So if I had a ballot with five candidates, I would number them 1 through 5 as far as which one I like the most or identify with the most. And you don't have to rank them all. So if you only want to rank, you know, your top three, you can rank your top three. And what that does is allows for a wider range of candidates that are running for office, and it allows community to really identify candidates or officials that they want to see in office. So proportional representation, as difficult as it sounds, it's really just making sure that the elected officials reflect community in a proportional way. Yeah, as far as, you know, transparency in the legislature goes, in addition to switching to the full-time, there's a lot of other things that we could do or that the state could do to really increase transparency and make the accessibility in Washington greater. One of the things, and you saw it last session most likely, is legislative staff making an effort to unionize. And that's not, only an effort that happened here. I'm pretty sure it happened down in California and in other places. But when we talk about transparency, when we really look at the legislature, the legislators are there, yes, pushing the bills, making the arguments, but the staff, the code writers or bill writers, all of those people are the ones also putting in a massive amount of work. And you definitely know that as a former LA. So really changing kind of the structure around and making it so that one legislative assistant doesn't have five people that they're an assistant to, and rather a really more one-on-one relationship and process would really change the legislature for the people on the outside.
Yeah, because I think, Washington State, we tout how, we're really proud of our record on labor standards, right? And I think, our executive director, Misha Wershkel, also spoke to that to Congress. You know, Washington's really proud of standing up for workers. And I think, we talked about the most recent election cycle, Tukwila also got a minimum minimum wage increase. You know, if we're a state that talks a lot about standing up for workers, and yet the place where we make the laws, the workers are not taken care of, I think that can be a really big issue.
Yeah. I mean, even looking at the legislators themselves, after this last session, we saw a large increase of legislators, both in the Senate and the House, that decided to not return or to run in the different chamber. But a large amount of the legislators that did publish something about why they're leaving was the lack of time they had to spend with their family, or because this part-time infrastructure and this part-time pay isn't enough to sustain their family. There comes a certain point when, as much as you love the job, as I'm sure many of them did, you have to make choices that are for your good for your family and for your livelihood.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, just to be clear too, what we saw was an exodus of lawmakers of color, right? And how that can, the structure of the legislature can really reinforce racial equity dynamics that we as advocates are often trying to work towards. So what does that mean when the structure itself can't maintain the values that we really are advocating for?
Yeah, definitely. I think even on the outside, last year with the budget being a big discussion point, is is the fact that like there is insanely tight turnarounds. I think we've talked about it in calls 100 times already of like the budget being presented and people having 24 hours to dive into this like 100-page document and being expected to give really good feedback about it.
Yeah, and we're told often by legislators that they trust our feedback, you know, they want to hear from us, and yet if you provide the bill with only hours to look at it, that kind of feels a little bit disingenuous maybe. And I know that, you know, our staff needs a lot more time to be able to think through and provide meaningful feedback, like you said. So as we're recording this episode, we're actually about, I don't know, a couple months out from the upcoming long session, so like the beginning of the biennium. And I'm curious to know, like, what are some things that are on your plate as far as your work with Washington Community Alliance, and how are you preparing for a legislative session?
Yeah. Oh, this is so exciting. We just finalized our legislative agenda, and our members have voted on 10 policies that they want to actively be supporting. And, you know, those range from some democracy reforms, like strengthening the Washington Voting Rights Act. There's some revenue bills in there. So there's the wealth tax, a free school lunch program, or expanding the free school lunch program. And then there are some police accountability bills, you know, transforming and changing traffic stops. Mm. So all of those are in there. What we're doing to prepare is a lot of one-pagers and reading about each of the policies, so that when we talk to our members about them or when we ask our members to take action, they have the materials and resources that they need to do that.
That's awesome. And how are you preparing personally? Like, I know that legislative session takes a huge toll on people who are really in the process. I mean, sometimes you're down there lobbying and like advocating or like waiting for a vote until like the middle of the night. I mean, what are you doing to like prepare personally?
Taking a lot of breaks away from work. I think really a lot of the legislative session for me is going to be running on the energy and the momentum that these bills are getting. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully that is enough to keep me up on those late nights.
So I can think my last question for you is, you know, we're out here in Spokane and Olympia is quite far away. So how do you feel about that, like disconnect in distance? And how does that impact your ability to advocate on the bills that you care about?
Yeah, it makes it a lot harder. I think COVID, while illuminating so many flaws in a lot of things, it has made it easier for folks like us in Spokane to be able to engage and to testify or to give public comment in whatever way because of that virtual setting. Otherwise, when I was in college, what we would do is we'd have to charter a bus and just drive all the way to Olympia, which, you know, takes a lot of time, especially, you know, if you're a college student, if you have a family, if you have a job that isn't in politics, that is a lot of time you have to take away just to be able to engage. So it's harder. Is it more rewarding? I think we're still figuring that out.
Thank you so much for joining me to talk about the legislative process and your role in it. And I appreciate all that you and the Washington Community Alliance do to help advance economic justice in Washington State.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, and thank you to the Budget and Policy Center. You know, you have all been great partners in all of the work that we've done together. So excited for more.
So Misha, you know, what was kind of cool is that the first time I actually met you was when I was working at the legislature as a legislative assistant, and you were an advocate down there, you know, lobbying on issues that were important to you. And that was like, you know, maybe over 10 years ago. And so there's been, I think, a lot happening in your career over the years. I'm just really interested to know maybe like some of your reflections that you have from that time, like early on when you were in that role working in the legislature.
I love thinking back to that time, April, and, you know, at that time you were working with one of the few members of color legislators, Representative Eric Pettigrew, and, you know, I was working with home care workers and nursing home workers and had the opportunity to really be like part of some pretty significant changes in terms of standards for home care in Washington State and the first staffing standards for nursing home workers and some really amazing state policy changes. So it was a really like fun time in my career and also a time of huge learning. I was like a lobbyist, like in the technical sense of the term. So I lived in Olympia during the legislative session, and I really saw my job as basically facilitating the voice of home care workers and nursing home workers in the state policymaking process. So home care workers, you know, work in people's homes. The work is often invisible and certainly underappreciated and undervalued. And not necessarily like top of mind for most legislators in their day-to-day. And so my job was really like making sure that that work and the workers were visible and that their power was recognized in the policymaking process. And, you know, I think one reflection that I've had kind of about that time period and kind of my work in that does get back to like really like how we first interacted and just kind of your role with Representative Pettigrew, because, you know, at that time there were so few members of color. There were very few staff of color, very few advocates of color. And really, like, if you just look over what now has been, I think, like 13 years, really a transformation in kind of representation in the state policymaking process in a really positive way. And so I think that's like a huge change for the better. And more has to be done, of course. And there's more kind of systems to change to make sure that everybody can participate in the process fully. But I just read this morning that Representative April Berg was selected to be the first Black committee chair in the entire history of the Washington State Legislature. Wow. And was kind of shocked to see that. But also like folks, more people running for office, more Black, Indigenous, people of color leaders stepping forward and moving into real positions of power and leadership is really transformational. And that has happened on the side of advocates as well, because, you know, there are, as you think about the organizations that we work with, organizations like the Washington Community Alliance with Denise earlier, One America, so many amazing organizations with kind of younger leaders of color, really charting a huge vision for our state and fighting for it. So I feel like that's been a really amazing change to see over the years. The other thing that I was thinking about kind of reflecting back on that time was it was really, I started lobbying in what I think was like the first year of really tough budget times with the Great Recession. And the idea of like, what was success? What was a win? What was possible for advocates during that time? Was really actually like very, very sad if you think back on it, because there were $10 billion in budget cuts made over just a few years. And I remember one of the big fights that we were involved in with the Home Care Workers Union was around proposed cuts to the number of hours that home care workers were going to be paid for the work that they were doing in people's homes. And there was no policy justification, no moral justification. There was really like no way to defend making those cuts to hours that hurt home care clients and hurt home care workers and hurt our communities. But it was sort of it was framed as the only option. It was what was possible at the time. The best we could do was minimize those cuts to home care services. And all across public services, there were just, you know, really like dramatic reductions that really had like very significant real life consequences. And when you contrast that with like where the conversation is at today about like what does success look like in a given legislative session, what is possible to accomplish, folks are able to hold a much like bigger vision for what that looks like. And it is not just preventing harm. It is about like really using state policy for the better. So it's a much more like exciting, I think, place of opportunity because of like the work that legislators, advocates, so many people in and around the state policymaking process have been fighting for. Thinking back on that time, it actually does feel like a lot has changed in a short period of time, which is pretty exciting.
And, you know, what you pointed to also, like when we were both in the legislature during that time of big cuts, one of the things that we often try to show in our budget analysis is like our state budget hasn't really recovered from those cuts, right? And we have been really strongly advocating for our budget, our state budget, to actually go beyond that kind of maintenance phase that I feel like we're kind of stuck in still. And so as we're heading into the next legislative session, what are some of the values that you'll be bringing with you as you're advocating on, you know, budget and tax-related policies and other policies that bring well-being to Washingtonians?
I think that it is super important, like in a policymaking process, to stay in any kind of process, really, to stay grounded in the values. And so I really appreciate like this question and the opportunity to think about those core values. You know, one thing that has really shifted for me is having a more long-term orientation to the work. You know, when I first started lobbying, I saw my role as like fundamentally to like work within the process that was set up by others to try to get the best outcome for home care workers that I could in like the span of a 2 or 3 month period of a legislative session. And over time, by learning from other leaders and advocates, learning from how legislators have acted, I have more of an orientation towards like, what is the process over time that's going to enable the most equitable outcomes in terms of policymaking? And I still absolutely want state legislators to do things in any given legislative session that makes people's lives better and responds to communities' needs. But I also have like a stronger focus on really what does the process look like? And it may not mean that the policy change happens in one legislative session, but how does that create the conditions for bigger changes over time? Mm-hmm. And really like more comfort thinking about, you know, that the big transformational change that we want to see may take 2, 3, 5, sometimes 10 years to get there, but it is worth kind of holding that bigger vision and fighting for that, even if it's like not possible in the space of one legislative session. And you know, part of this is something that came up in your conversation earlier with Denise about the what is like the experience of people working in state legislative bodies, both legislators and staff, and how are mm-hmm. folks like treated with dignity? How do they have a voice at work? And that may not like change outcomes in like one specific legislative session, but over time, I really do believe and have seen that if state policymaking processes can be a place where people who work in those processes like are really supported, it will lead to long-term change as more people are able to stay in that work, are able to move into positions of leadership, are able to really like fight for the changes that they know from their communities, like that will make a bigger difference over time. Mm-hmm. Another piece that I always am holding and that I think we hold really strongly at the Budget and Policy Center is a real rejection of the scarcity mindset that is really pervasive in state policymaking and state budget work specifically, where there's an idea that there are these constraints, be it the amount of time in a legislative session, or be it the number of bills that legislators are looking at, or the amount of money that's expected to come in through existing revenue sources, and that advocates have to scale down their dreams to like match those constraints. And I think that there's a balance of like really understanding the constraints and being kind of realistic about what's possible in a short period of time, while also like being able to push back against those boundaries. And so, you know, the clearest example is what about the state budget, where, you know, all the time folks have identify a need that a community has, and they come to Olympia or meet with legislators and say, I really need this thing to happen. And hear back, well, there's not enough money for it. You know, we can't afford it. And, you know, ultimately, like we at the Budget and Policy Center talk a lot about, like, if you look around Washington State, if you look at our communities, there is actually enough wealth here to meet the needs of our communities. And really challenge that idea that we have to start from a place of scarcity. And it may not be possible to do everything that we need to do again in one legislative session, but a simple answer of like, we can't afford it. Like that's unacceptable. We have to find out ways together to really truly meet community needs. And we have a lot of legislators who are partners in thinking that way as well, which is really exciting. The last piece I'll just mention is thinking about like continuous learning, which is something that we at the Budget and Policy Center also talk a lot about. You know, I have had the opportunity to be like in and around the Washington State policymaking process for somewhere in the range of like, you know, 13, 14 years now. And I find that every single campaign, every legislative session, especially as kind of new voices have come into policymaking processes, that I learn new ways of doing things, different ways of doing things, more kind of ways to challenge the status quo that are really, really powerful. And so I'm excited for this upcoming legislative session to see kind of how Denise and the Washington Community Alliance really push the boundaries of what's possible in terms of community voice and policymaking processes. I'm excited to see legislators. I think of my state senator, Rebecca Saldana, who I think has really like changed the idea of like policymaking being community input being done through these like 15-minute meetings in Olympia, mm-hmm. to really like a sense that like her job is to be out in her community, and that it's kind of on her as an elected leader to be out engaging with people on their terms. And I'm excited to see like there's even a more diverse set of legislators coming in this year, a more diverse set of leaders and committee chairs, stronger voices from advocates. And I'm just like excited to see what folks bring into the process that I can learn from, and really kind of continue to champion a more equitable process across the board.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Misha. I'm excited to see what we're able to do together in the legislative sessions, not just this coming year, but in the years ahead. And I just really appreciate your leadership and what you bring to the table for us. So thank you for taking the time to chat on this episode.
Thank you so much to Denise and Misha for sharing your stories with us. And thank you to the Legislative Information Center for giving us permission to use your explainer in this episode. You can learn more about Denise and Misha, get links to additional resources, and a transcript of this episode in the show notes and on our website, budgetandpolicy.org/podcast. Thank you for listening to WAH Possible. This is the final episode of our first season. If you have enjoyed our podcast and want to hear more, let us know. What are some of the other topics you want to learn about? Who are some folks you want us to talk to? Please share your feedback and review on your podcast app or connect with us on social media. You can also email us at bnpinfo@budgetandpolicy.org. We would love to hear from you as we plan for what's next for the podcast. WAH Possible is sponsored by the Economic Security Project, the Washington State Council of Firefighters, Bird Bar Place, Seattle Children's Hospital, and Washington Low Income Housing Alliance. Our theme music was created by Spokane beatmaker Rayvon Thakela, and the WAH Possible logo was designed by Seattle-based artist Eileen Jimenez. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing, giving us a review, and sharing our podcast with your friends and family.